Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. China has confirmed North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met in Beijing with China's President Xi Jinping. The unofficial visit took place from Sunday to Tuesday. China said Mr. Kim pledged to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, while the two countries said they'll deepen their friendship. Mr. Xi also accepted an invitation to visit the North. Tufts University Assistant Professor Sung-Hyun Lee said such a visit was bound to happen as Mr. Kim tries to reset the geopolitical chessboard.
Which is basically to be able to coax Seoul, Washington, Tokyo, and Beijing for a summit meeting as the leader of a veritable nukes are us state. And that means getting all those powers to pay up.
James Kim of the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies said South Korean reaction has been mixed.
Half of the people here are worried about the possibility that Kim Jong-un was able to negotiate some sort of a way out from the sanctions. There's also the possibility that he was able to get much-needed support from China, perhaps to get some assurance from China that China will be there to support Kim Jong-un.
China said it briefed President Donald Trump on the visit. The trip to Beijing comes ahead of an inter-Korean summit planned next month. The Trump administration says it will end a program allowing Liberians in the U.S. to avoid deportation. But the deferred enforced departure program set to expire Saturday will be extended for a year, part of a wind-down effort. Because of conflicts in the 1990s, some Liberians already in the U.S. were allowed to stay on longer and to work. Similar protections for Salvadorans, Haitians, and Nicaraguans have been ended. This is VOA News. The fallout from the poisoning of a former Russian double agent in Britain continues. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis calls the use of a nerve agent on Sergei Skripal and his daughter an act of attempted murder. London said the Kremlin was complicit in the attack. White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said other countries have followed Britain and the U.S. in expelling Russian diplomats.
As of this morning, over 25 countries all around the world have expelled 150 Russian intelligence officers hiding under diplomatic cover in their countries.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance has ordered seven Russians to leave their posts.
This is a broad, strong, and coordinated international response. And as part of that response, NATO is unified in taking further steps.
British Prime Minister Theresa May said she was pleased by the international response.
And obviously, I welcome the international support that we have garnered in this. Although, as I said in the House yesterday, this isn't just a matter of the UK's position and working with the UK. It's, I think, in the national security interests of the individual countries concerned.
Russia has denied any role in the March 4th attack, has called the West's response provocative, and vowed to respond in kind. Angry Russians Tuesday rallied in the Siberian city of Kemerovo following Sunday's shopping mall blaze that killed 64 people, including more than 40 children. Many of the victims were trapped inside the inferno by locked doors. President Vladimir Putin flew to the scene of the carnage and placed flowers at a makeshift memorial. He decried what he called administrative negligence in construction and vowed to track down those responsible. The UN Security Council renewed the mandate of the peacekeeping mission to the Democratic Republic of Congo, tasked with it preparing the way for delayed presidential elections scheduled for December. MONUSCO will remain at least until March 2019. The election is supposed to pave the way for the successor to President Joseph Kabila, whose mandate expired more than a year ago. U.S.-UN Ambassador Nikki Haley has scolded the Security Council over its inability to implement a 30-day ceasefire in Syria.
And we cannot take these actions because instead of calling out how Assad, Russia, and Iran made a mockery of our calls for a ceasefire, too many members of this council wanted to wait. This is a travesty.
Russia hit back, saying it was the only country working to turn the ceasefire into a reality. The U.S. and South Korea said they've reached agreement in principle on a new trade pact with details expected to be made public soon. It's expected to exempt Seoul from stiff U.S. tariffs on imported steel. South Korea said it will limit its steel exports and increase access to its market of U.S. vehicles. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 28th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The Trump administration has decided to end the deferred and forced departure status for some Liberians here in the United States, effective March 31st, 2019.
We believe that terminating DED, deferred and forced departure, for Liberia is the wrong decision, whether the termination happens now or a year from now.
Amahakasa is with the African Communities Together organization. Sierra Leone's opposition SLPP denies its candidate has made inflammatory statements ahead of Saturday's round of election. IGAD says South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar should be released from house arrest in South Africa. And Miguna Miguna says he's still being held incommunicado by Kenyan authorities.
The problem is the populism. People who acquire power illegitimately and cling to that power using the gun and do not want to tolerate a dissent, do not want to tolerate opposition. That is the problem. Ruling by force.
That's Miguna Miguna from his detention area at the Kenyan International Airport. The son of former Angolan President Jose Eduardo dos Santos is accused of involvement in a $500 million fraud. And the former Zimbabwe First Lady Grace Mugabe played a part in the poaching of protected animals. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump has decided to end the deferred and forced departure, or DED, status for some Liberians here in the United States, effective March 31st, 2019. The program was set up to expire March 31st this year on Saturday, and Liberians benefiting from it would have been deported. But in a memo, President Trump said, as part of the wind down, Liberian DED beneficiaries will continue to receive employment authorization for 12 months. The president said Liberia no longer is experiencing armed conflict and has made significant progress in restoring stability and democratic governance. But Amahakasa of the African Communities Together organization says terminating the DED is the wrong decision, whether it happens now or a year from now.
We believe that terminating DED, deferred and forced departure, for Liberia is the wrong decision, whether the termination happens now or a year from now. We fought hard to get this program continued, and we believe that the Liberian DED holders who've been here literally for decades now deserve a chance to remain in the U.S. permanently.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you. In a sense, this memo is a mixed bag for Liberians under DED. On one hand, it gives them some kind of reprieve. On the other hand, looking down the line, they could face the same problem.
Exactly. We fought hard to get the one-year reprieve. You know, 50 members of Congress from both houses and from both parties signed on to a letter to the White House calling for the extension for the renewal of DED. Over 600 faith community leaders, religious leaders, called for the extension and renewal of DED. And so, you know, we're glad that for the next year, people will have legal status and that they'll have the ability to work legally. However, that doesn't change the fact that in 1 year's time, people are going to be facing the prospect of losing their legal status and losing their work authorization. For most of them, they have no way to become permanent residents under U.S. law. And it doesn't change the fact that it's unrealistic for most DED holders to return to Liberia, either for them, for their U.S. citizen children who have been born and raised here, or Liberia to potentially absorb thousands of displaced Liberian Americans. So we bought some time, and we're proud that our advocacy helped do that. But it's not enough. We need a permanent solution.
So what did you say to the argument made by the Trump administration, which is that Liberia no longer is experiencing armed conflict and the country has made significant progress in restoring stability and democratic governance?
Well, thank God that Liberia has made significant progress in stabilizing in the wake of the civil war. As we all know, Liberia also experienced major setbacks as a result of the Ebola virus epidemic, which undermined some of that progress. And what we heard from leadership in Liberia, from the Liberian ambassador, is that they believed people did need a way to remain in the U.S., that while Liberia may have made progress, returning thousands of Liberian Americans to the country, cutting off the remittances that people are able to send from here as they work and own businesses, contributing to unemployment, that is not going to help the progress. It's actually going to move it backwards. So for us, there's that issue. And then there's just the issue that people have been here for decades. They have had to renew their DED status continuously. They've had to submit to additional screenings and background checks. They're among the most vetted immigrants in the United States. They've raised families here. They've worked and organized businesses here. And we think that they've, regardless of what's happening in Liberia, we think that they've earned the opportunity to become permanent residents right here.
Amahakasa is with the African Communities Together organization. He was speaking with me from New York. The Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, is denying accusations that its presidential candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, has been making inflammatory statements ahead of Saturday's runoff election. The National Election Watch, a local civil society group, said Mada Bio made the alleged statements during a news conference in Freetown. But SLPP National Publicity Secretary Lahai Lawrence Lima says the allegations are an attempt to tarnish Mada Bio, who narrowly won the March 7th first-round vote. Lima said retired Brigadier Mada Bio has consistently said and will continue to say that he will not accept any election result that is rigged.
Retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio did not make any threatening remarks that if he did not win, there will be war in Sierra Leone. What retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio has always been saying and will continue to say is that he will not accept any election results that is rigged. Of course, we will be conducting elections that we will not also focus on the process being sanitized. And so he has always said that he will accept a result that is clean and that is free, fair, and transparent, that he will not accept any rigged elections result. That is always what he stands for, and that is what he has been saying, that he has not threatened any war if he does not win election.
So what is the background of what he is saying, that he would not accept any election that is rigged? I mean, the Elections Commission has had the first-round vote. Is there anything in the first-round vote that gives him any grounds to suspect any rigging in the coming election?
Well, before this time, in the 2012 elections, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio was the presidential candidate of the SLPP. And his elections, he's always considered, was rigged in that 2012 elections because counting was still going on when election results was announced by the former National Electoral Commission chairperson. And since he has also been elected as the presidential candidate of the Sierra Leone People's Party, he has always said that what happened in 2012 should not repeat itself and that he would encourage the National Electoral Commission to conduct free, fair, and transparent elections. That has always been his statement. So we find ourselves at the moment in a situation where the APC government, under the leadership of President Nkrumah, has been pushing the country to a brink by creating constitutional crisis in the country. The president or the APC government has circumvented a situation where the election schedule for the 27th has now been shifted to the 31st. But before now, on the 26th, when retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio came with his press release, there was an injunction slammed on the elections by the High Court, which do not have the jurisdiction to slam such an injunction. And so in that light, as the lead presidential candidate into the runoff elections, decided to come up with a press release, also calling the international community or international observers and the press, and putting out the party's position that the president will bear the greatest responsibility for any undemocratic approach to halt the elections. And so questions came from the press, which he was able to address. And as a statesman who has contributed immensely to the democracy and peace we enjoyed in this country, he has exercised a lot of restraint, even in circumstances where he has been provoked. So for us to find ourselves in a situation where a civil society organization that is expected to be credible, to make a statement without facts, It's unfortunate, it's regrettable, and that we called on them to retract that statement and apologize to the presidential candidate and the Australian People's Party.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Today is Wednesday, March 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. The IGAD Council of Ministers says the house arrest of opposition leader Riek Machar should be lifted immediately. In a communique at the 61st extraordinary session in Addis Ababa, the Council of Ministers also reiterated its conviction that durable solutions are the only way out of what it calls South Sudan's extremely grim political and humanitarian situation. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
The warring parties have conducted two rounds of peace talks without successfully signing a final deal. The IGAD Council of Ministers said it decided to take targeted sanctions against individual violators and refer to the AU Peace and Security Council for appropriate punitive measures. The council says SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar's house arrest should be lifted as soon as possible, on condition that he renounces violence and not obstruct the peace process. If those conditions are met, the council says, he should be allowed to relocate to any country outside the region, but not neighboring South Sudanese countries. Wani Michael, the executive director at OK Africa Foundation, says South Sudan's peace mediators must heed IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan, Ambassador Ismail Wai's recommendations, and put pressure on the warring parties to make peace this time around.
It is time that IGAD have to show to South Sudanese that they are not promoting the conflict, because the South Sudanese back home in Juba and elsewhere have lost faith in the IGAD-led peace process, and I think it is time for them to redeem themselves.
Manasseh Mathiang, a peace activist with the Juba-based Anataban organization, says IGAD should take clear steps to ensure that peace violators are punished.
One is that the IGAD draws up and enforces a number of punitive measures against individual violators and spoilers of peace and entities responsible for violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement.
The cessation of hostilities agreement was signed in December 2017 during phase one of the talks, but has been violated repeatedly by both warring parties. Mathiang says the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism, or CITSAM, must clearly identify individuals and other parties that violate the cessation of hostilities agreement.
We also recommend that CITSAM releases reliable reports on implementation of the agreement on cessation of hostilities by parties, and make concrete recommendations to the IGAD Council of Ministers on the same.
The Council of Ministers says mediators will undertake shuttle diplomacy with the parties to reconcile the position of the parties on responsibility sharing and permanent security arrangements, two of the major sticking points, before the next forum. It is also urging all South Sudanese participating in the forum to engage in good faith and to resolve all outstanding issues to achieve the objective of the revitalization of the 2015 peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Miguna Miguna, the self-declared leader of the National Resistance Movement of Kenya, said he's still being held incommunicado by Kenyan authorities at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in Nairobi. Miguna returned to Kenya Monday from a six-week exile in Canada, but was denied entry into the country because he failed to present to immigration authorities the passport he traveled on. A judge has ordered Miguna released from the detention center at the airport, and also his appearance in court today, Wednesday. In a statement to the news media from what he called a toilet at Terminal 2 at the airport, Miguna said Kenya authorities have refused to release him despite the court order.
The judge ordered that I go to court, but I can only go to court if I'm released, but I don't receive. The purported revocation was because, or secondly, the purported cancellation of my passport was also quashed, and the court has ordered 7 different times that a valid Kenyan passport be returned to me the way they obtained it from me on February 6th. It's not an argument, it's a court order. So they are just refusing to obey the court order. The court also ordered that I am a Kenyan by my citizenship, and that I would be arriving in Kenya as a Kenyan. And that is what I presented to them, gave them the court order, showed them the paragraph, which they have debated every single paragraph, including the requirement that they allow my lawyer to access me beyond immigration and customs, and they did not allow me to enter as a Kenyan. They wanted me to enter as a Canadian. Now, particularly, every single time I travel to this country before, and everybody else who comes to this country must submit their Kenyan passport because they are Kenyan. There is Kenyan and non-Kenyan. So I go to the Kenyan street. When I end there, my passport is not there. They are supposed to give it, but they are supposed to give their travel document. So I took out my Kenyan national ID card to evidence that I am a Kenyan. And they refused to recognize it. They insisted that I must show them the passport that I traveled with. But this does not happen every time. You don't show the passport that you travel on. That passport simply gets you on the plane. But that has nothing to do with immigration.
Put in context for us the situation in Kenya and the whole idea of political transition in Africa. What can you say is the problem?
The problem is the populism. People who acquire power illegitimately and cling to that power using the gun and do not want to tolerate a dissent, do not want to tolerate opposition, do not want to allow democracy to prosper and thrive. That is the problem, ruling by force.
How would you describe the judiciary in Kenya?
To tell you the truth, the judiciary has simply done its job. This is not a very complicated case. There is no judge in the entire world who would have given a different decision. This is elementary law. A person born in a country cannot lose citizenship because a passport does not give you citizenship. Citizenship by birth is given by your mother. Nobody can withdraw that away from me unless I was not born. I only lose it upon death. So I don't know how they don't understand that basic logic and basic law. So there is nothing unusual the judiciary has done.
That was Miguna Miguna, the self-proclaimed leader of the National Resistance Movement of Kenya. He was speaking with me from his detention area at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in Nairobi. The son of former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos is accused of involvement in a $500 million fraud. José Filomeno dos Santos was removed as head of the $5 billion wealth fund by President João Lourenço in January. The younger dos Santos has been prevented from leaving the country. Meanwhile, and as we hear from veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpai Vai, President Lourenço has left the country for the United States.
It's true, but this is just a short official news saying that the president wants to the United States of America in a private visit. The president left the country in the afternoon of Monday, and I believe at this stage he must already arrive in the United States. The official note of the president doesn't say another reason for the visit of President João Lourenço to the United States, and there are a number of speculation on that, not only due to the current political situation and also economic crisis which Angola are suffering now, but also on the alleged some kind of illness of the president. But at this stage, as I said before, the official notes just say a couple of words, adding that it's just a private visit.
Other developments coming out of Angola is the son of former President José Eduardo dos Santos, who we understand has been charged for allegations that he was involved in a $500 million fraud. What can you tell us about José Filomeno dos Santos?
Yes, it's true. But according to the Angolan law, which is similar to Portuguese and Dutch Portuguese-speaking countries, we must say in English, he's been named the suspect, or I would say formal suspect of a fraud of $500 million US dollars to the United Kingdom in a process which is under investigations for the Supreme Court, and where he's also named the suspect, the former Central Bank Governor Walter Philip. This is, in fact, a major development in the country. And this Tuesday, in the main official national radio bulletins, Mr. Filomeno dos Santos made a press release saying that he is ready to cooperate with the Supreme Court. He is not allowed to go out of the country, and he hand over his passport to the Supreme Court. The same kind of measures also cover the former Central Bank Governor, Walter Philip. I must also say, in a similar process of fraud, not 500, but 50 million US dollars, so the current army staff chief, General Sacipendo Nunda, was also charged, alongside the former director of a foreign investment agency, now the head of information of the Politburo of the ruling party MPLA, Norberto dos Santos, who was also charged.
Mario, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai speaking with us from Luanda. Zimbabwe's National Parks and Wildlife Management Authority says it has given the police relevant documents linking former First Lady Grace Mugabe to the poaching of protected animals in the country. Park spokesperson Tanache Farawo told View Zimbabwe program that the police will use the documents to investigate allegations that Mrs. Mugabe intended to ship wildlife material to the Middle East, United Arab Emirates, and China. Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, said investigations on the poaching allegations are in progress.
What we've done, we've provided the police with information with some of the documents which the office of the president then was requesting for the shipment of alleged gifts to countries like China, United Arab Emirates, and also United States of America. So that's what we've done. We've provided that information to the police, and I think the matter is an investigation, and as us as national parks, that's what we have done.
But how do you bring the former First Lady into this if the request was from the president's office?
We can give you an example where, for an example, one particular Sunday, I'm sure it was on the 29th of October in last year, when a request was made from the office of the president to ensure that those things, they are shipped out of the country. But when the director general refused to sign, he was asked by one of the directors then, I think the director, of, I'm not sure about the name, but the director then asked the director general that, do you really want the First Lady to phone you direct so that you can process that shipment? But it was after the director general had expressed the reservation on what was happening, because he wanted to verify the product and the papers which he was supposed to sign.
But there are some who are alleging that the National Parks is now being used as a political pawn to victimize former President Robert Mugabe and the First Lady.
We have nothing to do with politics. Our job and our mandate is to ensure that we sustainably utilize our wildlife. Our mandate is to ensure that generations to come can benefit from these animals. We want to ensure that the healthy population of our elephants that we have is still there, the health population of our lions and all other animals that we were God-given are still there. That's our mandate. But I also need to emphasize the fact that if you look at our poaching statistics since becoming in of the new leadership, and when President Mnangagwa, His Excellency President Mnangagwa, took over office in November, poaching statistics have drastically gone down. And we are really excited about that because it seems like we have a lot of support from the highest office in the land. And it is making our work easier because now we can sustainably use our wildlife and our resources.
That was Tinashe Farawo, the spokesperson of the National Parks and Wildlife Management Authority of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with Blessing Zulu of View Zimbabwe Service. And that is it for this Wednesday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you again to join us tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a good Wednesday, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of the VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.